I don't want to see the word navigate. I don't want to see the words ever evolving. I don't want to see financial landscape. Like, there are tells on ChatGPT or Perplexity or whichever model that you use. So just making sure that you're thoughtful and taking the time to put it in your own voice is really critical and is what's going to make your business stand out from others that don't take the time to do that.
Welcome to B2B Content Strategist, where we bring you insights and practical tips straight from the minds of top B2B content marketing experts. I'm Amy Woods, founder and CEO of Content 10X, and in each episode, I chat with leading B2B marketers about how they consistently craft and execute successful campaigns, even when faced with tight deadlines and limited resources. If you're looking to elevate and optimize your content marketing efforts, you're in the right place. Keep listening. Hello and welcome to the B2B Content Strategy Podcast. I'm your host, Amy Woods, and today I'm joined by Michelle Asher, Director of Public Relations and Marketing at LendKey. LendKey is a fintech company that partners with credit unions and community banks, helping them compete at scale through a unique lending-as-a-service model. Michelle leads both marketing and PR at LendKey, and over the past 3 years, she's helped steer the company's content strategy across multiple channels, including overseeing the launch of their very first podcast. In this episode, Michelle shares how a small but mighty marketing team can create high-impact content by staying clear on one thing: purpose. She explains why every piece of content should have a reason to exist and how that mindset helps her team get the most out of everything they create, everything from ebooks and newsletters to a 22-minute podcast they regularly repurpose across channels. This is a fantastic conversation. Let's jump in. Michelle, welcome to B2B Content Strategies Podcast. It's so great to have you here.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm very much looking forward to the conversation with you. To kick things off, could you share a bit about your role and also just a few sentences about what LendKey does as well?
Sure, I'd be happy to. I work at LendKey. It's a financial technology company based out of Cincinnati, Ohio. And I've been here 3 years now, and I lead marketing and public relations here at LendKey. We're a small but mighty team, marketing team here, and recently consolidated marketing teams. There used to be a B2C team and a B2B team, and now we're all one happy family now. And what LendKey does is we work with credit unions and community banks, basically, so they're able to compete on a larger scale. They can pool their resources and collectively lend, agreeing on similar underwriting policies and things like that. And what LendKey does is, so we connect the borrowers to these community lenders, which provides the borrower more competitive rates. And instead of, because we work in the student loan space and the home improvement loan space, but in the student loan space in particular, I'm not sure about the UK, but the US, there's some challenges with predatory lenders, so to speak. And what we wanted to do was offer borrowers a more competitive and a more, I don't want to say fair option, but a better option to finance their higher education. And then we also have Alero, which is our loan participation platform, which I compare to an Amazon for loans because financial institutions need to buy and sell loans to better manage their balance sheet. So it's an elevator pitch of what LendKey does, but it's really great to work with community lenders that truly believe in their communities and believe in the financial success of their members.
It sounds like you've got quite a bit of responsibility in terms of the marketing and PR, and you mentioned the bringing together of B2B and B2C as well, and small and mighty team. So how do you structure things? What does the team look like, so to speak?
Sure. We have Brock, who is my boss and oversees the entire team. And then we have someone who works on the digital data end of driving on our B2C side, driving those student loan and student loan refinance originations. We have an affiliate partner manager who handles the nerd wallets, the Credibles, the other marketplaces that drive our loans. And we have a marketing specialist who handles our events and social media and a variety, our podcast and a variety of other tasks. And we have a digital marketing manager as well that really looks at the back end of things, manages our HubSpot, Google Analytics, things like that. So that's how it's structured now. And we have a variety of vendors we work with as well.
Yeah, that was my next question, actually, in terms of there's certain things that you will always keep in-house or are likely to keep in-house, and then some things that you'll work with vendors and outside suppliers when you need to bring in that expertise. So are there specific like types of marketing or specific tasks and projects, things like that, that you prefer to work with outside vendors versus keep in-house and vice versa?
Right. Yeah. I typically pull vendors in because we are a small team. So when we need a larger, more comprehensive piece of content to be able to source that out and just oversee the process and direct it, because we just don't have the bandwidth to dedicate some of these, like doing a really thoughtful white paper or ebook, that can take a few months to put together. When you have a very small team that's wearing so many hats, you just don't have the time to dedicate a few months to that. But then also when we decided to launch our first, Lenkey's first podcast, I know nothing about, listened to a lot of podcasts, but have never produced a podcast. So that's a big undertaking, sourcing something like that out. Again, just overseeing the direction and edit or proofing and editing as things come out. But so it's really those big pieces of content when you have a small team that you need to source out the things like creating social media posts, writing blogs, things like that, that you can knock out pretty quickly. Those stay in-house.
Yeah, that makes sense. And you guys have create loads of content. As you mentioned, it's fantastic that you've got the podcast and, like you said, papers and all the bigger pieces of content. It really caught our eye when we're looking for guests to invite on to B2B content strategists. We're looking for the B2B companies that just seem progressive with content and are interesting and varied and creating interesting content. Out of the content that you create for those bigger pieces, what is your favorite type of content and a favorite format of content for repurposing? So really squeezing value from and getting more content from it. Is there a preferred format, the white papers or the podcasts or videos or blog posts or anything like that?
I think our last ebook was a really great piece of content because we could pull so many things from it. We were able to take the mini case studies from there and make more extensive case studies. We were able to pull quotes. We were able to create videos from the information in that ebook, things like that. But outside of the ebook, I would say the podcast, our podcast, we're able to pull quotes. We're able to do mini videos and shorts. We're able to do either. We're able to put things in our newsletter, to put things in B2B emails, marketing emails. We're able to pull so many insights and so many pieces of content from just one 22-minute. Our podcast is 22 minutes in lending. It's very specific to people's attention span is typically only 22 minutes. So that's why some people sometimes ask why we had such a random specific number, but it was based on people's attention span. But it's amazing how many pieces of content you can pull from 22 minutes of conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. How long have you been running the podcast?
We have been running the podcast for about 2.5 years now. So
that's awesome. Yeah.
Two seasons, about 20 average of 20 episodes a season. It's been really great. It's generated a lot of great relationships. And I think that's the key too, is really understanding the purpose behind a piece of content. Don't do content just to do content. What is the purpose? And constantly reiterating that, not just internally, but externally. What is the purpose of the podcast? Purpose of a B2B podcast is relationship building. And really having people on that not only provide value to the listeners, but provide value to the business as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously you've embarked on another season and I guess there's more to come. So you're happy and being happy with how it's going. And I completely agree with you about the relationship side and then there's so much content that you can get. Like 22 minutes is a lot of value can be shared in that amount of time. And if there's substance to it, then you can create more content from it, can't you? Across your entire career, so not necessarily just in the role right now, but just across your career, what would you say is the most memorable marketing campaign that you've been involved in or that you have run? I say memorable, not necessarily most successful, but just something that always really brings a smile to your face or is memorable for different reasons. I don't know, like the most memorable campaign.
Yeah, actually, it's hands down. I worked for a credit union, Colorado's largest credit union, during COVID. And when lockdown happened, I think everybody was scrambling to figure out, what do we do? What do we do next? And what I kept hearing and what many people kept hearing was the fear of small businesses being locked down, where really every day, every hour counts towards that bottom line when you're a small business. So we created the small business giveaway. And seeing as we were all locked down, it was centered around social media. So we encouraged people to nominate their favorite small business by tagging them on small business. Tell us why, who the small business was and why they loved them. And this would lead to us narrowing down to 4 finalists that would be competing for $50,000. And so we launched the campaign, and this was one of those unexpected results of not really realizing people were locked down. So they were only on social media at the time. We received hundreds of thousands of posts, of comments on these posts, and it resulted in more than 75,000 nominations. Then we narrowed those down to 4, but it just exploded. And it was so great to see, because it wasn't just about the money, it was the prize money for this. It was about people telling people about the small businesses and why they loved them and giving them that increased exposure. So ultimately, with those 4 finalists, then I produced story videos to tell the story of the small business and why this money would be crucial for their business. And then it was open to a vote from the public to vote on their favorite small business. And then over a Zoom call live, we announced the winners, and they all won a portion of that $50,000. It was one of those moments, and it gives me, I still get all goosebumpy thinking about it. Like, it was just one of those really feel good moments. And because we had this immense response, the credit union decided to do a surprise second round of $50,000. So we gave away $100,000 total. So we randomly chose 5 more businesses that had received an outpouring of nominations, or that somebody shared a really amazing story about. And then we actually showed up with masks and social distance, but with the big checks, we surprised them at their business, surprised them with an additional round that nobody knew was coming. So it was just one of those where sometimes in our jobs, you don't feel that direct connection with a community or with a person. And just to see what this meant to people. And I had owned a small business at one point, so I know what this money means. Where to somebody else, to an Amazon, it's not that much to receive $5,000 or $10,000. But to a small business, it can keep them afloat.
Especially in that, at that time, at any time. But I'm sure, like, many small businesses obviously were really struggling with the pandemic as well, and things, depending on what the businesses were, but at that time even more, I imagine. And then you mentioned the community side of it. I think people were wanting to really lean in more to community more than ever as well, weren't they? It was a time where everyone became, well, not everyone, but a lot of people became more supportive and community focused, I think, as well, trying to support each other. I guess it was a sign, a real sign of what was going on in the times as well, wasn't it? So what a great example, what a great story. And you got so much content from that. It
so
must have been
content.
It kept on giving from a content perspective as well, which is fantastic.
Because then we would revisit a year later, where are these businesses now?
That's awesome.
And interviewing them. And so I think having that foresight, obviously we didn't know it was going to explode the way that it did, but also having the foresight of like, how do we keep this going? Something that's successful, you don't want it to just fall off a cliff. Like, how do we keep revisiting it is, I think, the question you have to keep asking yourself.
What was the, how did the story evolve, so to speak, and what did they do and that kind of thing? Yeah, that's absolutely awesome. What a great story. Thank you for sharing that. In terms of content creation and content management tools, are there any specific tools that you and your team love to use that help with the content creation process or workflow or anything like that that you just couldn't live without?
Sure. It's funny because any trained designers are going to cringe at this, but my team can, and I am a trained designer. I was trained on, I am an Adobe girl, but Canva is really the lifesaver for our team. When you have, I have a young person on my team who's just at the beginning of their career. I have other people on the team that are not designer, self-proclaimed, not designers, but to Canva has just made it so simple to go in, create a template, or even if you've never designed a day in your life, but you have to make a social post, to be able to take a template and just copy and paste some information in it, and it's good, or it's at least passable and usable. It's really saved my team and me personally so much time to be able to do that. I know it's the Canva is to designers as ChatGPT is to writers, where it is a simplified kind of cookie cutter approach, but if you take the time to design templates that look good and are strong, it's such an easy way for people to go in and design that have never designed anything before.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We love Canva as well. And like you'll say, with writing in the ChatGPT, you can tell when something has been written by ChatGPT. But I don't think, you know, unless it was like an obvious Canva template and you're using it really basic, in a really basic way. I don't think Canva's like that in terms of, you can create some fantastic content using Canva. And also, I really like the way that you can collaborate in Canva because of the nature of how you can have a team and you can all go in and play around with different designs and share the templates. There's so many neat features too. So yeah, I've always loved Canva, and I love how they evolve and grow with the times as well. So I've probably been using it for, I don't know, 8 years, and it's really evolved in that time too.
It really has. And I think, like you touched on, which is what I always tell people about using ChatGPT or anything like that, any of the AI tools, is consider it a starting point. Consider it a prompt. I think the only time, like you said, the only time you can really tell it's Canva is when people haven't taken the time to just make it their own, especially around the holidays. Around the holidays on social media, you're like, okay, that's the top Thanksgiving template coming out of Canva.
Yeah, that's true.
Just a super quick break from this conversation to let you know that if you're a B2B technology or professional services company and you want help with streamlining your content operations, outsourcing your content repurposing is the number one way to produce more high quality content and boost your ROI without putting any more pressure on your team. In fact, it could save your team up to 30 hours per week. We offer content repurposing services for video and audio content. Whether you have a show or you're launching a brand new one, maybe you have an archive of awesome content, be it webinars or a virtual event, or you want help creating thought leadership content that we can repurpose, we've got you covered. Head to content10x.com to see how we can help you and start increasing your efficiency and the value you get from your content. Now back to the conversation.
But moving on to AI, so obviously we've just a nice little segue into talking about AI and ChatGPT and things like that. So from your perspective, what are your views on that in this content marketing world? How are you leveraging AI, and what are your general observations and views?
the blessing and a curse type situation, I think, with AI. And again, it is changing and adapting so rapidly. But initially, when ChatGPT launched, and you could definitely tell, like people just weren't really understanding. And I try and evangelize this where it. ChatGPT or things like that are so fantastic for someone on a small team, really, that have to produce large amounts of content. It's really hard to stare at a blank page and start from scratch. So using that as an idea starter, as a prompt, and going from there has really been invaluable for someone with a small team, but there's a need for large amounts of content. I just think the danger is people not understanding that you have to edit it. Like, it is a starting point. If I see, and my team will laugh if they watch this, because I say this all the time, I'm like, I don't want to see the word navigate. I don't want to see the words ever evolving. I don't want to see financial landscape. Like, there are certain
realm.
There are unlocked potential opportunities, things like that. Like, there are tells on ChatGPT or Perplexity or any, whichever model that you use. So just making sure that you're thoughtful and taking the time to put it in your own voice, I think, is really critical and is what's going to make you or your business stand out from others that don't take the time to do that.
Yeah, I completely agree. Do you have any rules in place at all around copywriting ownership with AI generated copy? Did you have any rules, policies specific about if you take content from AI, anything that you need to do or anything like that? Because I know that's a bit of a new world that content teams are trying to navigate as well, the IP and copywriting of it can give you copyrighted and other people's IP that you could take forward without realizing.
It's a huge issue. The point I always try and drive home with my team, because I personally prefer Perplexity over ChatGPT, mainly because it cites sources, and ChatGPT is starting to do that more, but that's why it was always there, because it would attribute where it pulled information from, but also knowing that it makes things up. They all make things up. It may give you a quote from John Smith at ABC Credit Union, but that's why I like Perplexity, is you can click into that citation and make sure it's really there, which, interestingly enough, a lot of times, more often than not, it's not. It has just created a quote that appears to be a legitimate quote based on other things that were said in that article. So I always say, I'm like, you have to fact check everything, and don't fact check it with AI.
Definitely.
Old school, you have to go to a search engine and put this in. You have to click on that cited source and ensure that was actually said. And like you said, giving proper attribution, if it's pulling it from somewhere, making sure that you're sharing that source. I'm a journalism major. It was citing sources and verifying facts was drilled into me at a very young age. I do my best to drill that into my team as well.
Yeah, it's so important, and even more so with that. And I agree with you. My preferred tool is Perplexity. I really like it. Occasionally go and check the others, and then you always end up coming back to Perplexity.
Exactly.
And I think part of it is that the sourcing. Right. I really like that.
And I think understanding too that I remember when ChatGPT first launched and it was like, wow, this is great. And then realizing that the second, the third, the fourth time you use it, it's cycling the same information. And again, it's adapting, and they're better, way better now than when they first launched, but just keeping a lens on that and I think just understanding you can't be totally reliant on AI. I just feel like that's the danger point. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of content now that is saying the same things.
Yeah. It's becoming very competitive. Yeah. And people start to zone out, don't they? So you have to stand above, and with even more differentiated content, which I think is the game that we're all playing at the moment, isn't it? So it's that time of the show where I'm going to ask you a question that the previous guest asked, and then you can ask your question for the next one. So the question for you, it comes from Catherine Senser. She's principal and content strategist at Cerity Partners. And your question is,
in the B2B space, sharing content in networks seems to be really important to generate referral traffic, to get interest in it, and to build credibility for your content. In a large volume production content space where you have a lot of content going at once, how do you engage your colleagues and incentivize them to share? What are you doing to make sure they're aware of everything you're doing internally? How do you get them to pay attention?
That's a great question. It can be a struggle. It can be a struggle to get internal people engaged and sharing your content. And I think it starts with underlining the value and the importance of that, like giving them the why. I think it's really important to communicate the why it's important that they engage with and share your company's content, and really making it personal as well. I gave a whole presentation on this doesn't just help LendKey, for instance. This helps you build your professional brand. It helps you become a trusted resource and a trusted authority in the space. So I think the first is communicating the why. I think the second is making it as easy as possible for them to do so. So providing a suggested post and recommending they customize it so everybody's not putting the same post out there, providing them a link to our social post so they can just click on it and easily share, like making it as simple and as easy as possible, removing any and all barriers to them sharing that content, I think is critical, whether it's channels on Slack or Teams or something like that, to easily be able to communicate. Sometimes I go old school, I email out a link. Here's why we'd like you to push out this content. Here's why it's important. Here's a suggested post. Here's the link to the content. And again, just outlining the purpose behind it and making it as easy as possible. We ran a social contest pretty early on. I haven't found great results with that. And I think the challenge is at the end of the day, there are just people that will do it, and there are just people that won't do it. Oh, and I think a critical piece there as well is determining who knows how. I think we're also immersed in it, and we're just surrounded by it, that we assume everybody knows what they're doing, that they know how to share a post, that they know the actual process of what to do and how to tag someone. And yeah, so I think communicating the why, making it simple, and ensuring that people actually understand how.
Yeah, I love that. And the last point, I think it's called curse of knowledge, isn't it? Where you know so much about it, it's easy to assume another person would, but actually, right, somebody may have never posted anything on LinkedIn a day in their life, and you have this image carousel that you're asking people to share, and they might help if they need power, and you just assume that they know. Yeah, help them with it, and don't assume that they just know how to do it as well. And I really, that was a fantastic answer, so thank you very much for that. That was fun, really valuable. So for you, you don't know who the guest is yet, but there'll be a leader in the B2B marketing space running a marketing team just like yourself. What would you like to ask them?
I think my most burning question right now for other content strategists or content marketers is social media for a long time has been the no-brainer go-to for content. But at least in the US, based on some turmoil, some kind of social unrest, I know a lot of people personally that are limiting their social media consumption or being very thoughtful and cautious around their social media consumption. So how has that affected content strategies, or how has it affected your content strategy? And have you made any adjustments based on that?
That's a fantastic question. And as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking about what I think my answer would be and what I think some of our clients would say as well, because I know that this has been quite a thing. And looking at the analytics and data from looking at changing behavior and making some changes and what do people really want and how do you deliver that? So there's loads to go out there. And so, yeah, thank you. Thank you so much. Michelle, thank you for being on B2B Content Strategist podcast. It's been a fantastic conversation. Thank you for coming along and sharing so much value. Is there any next step that you would like listeners to take? Would you like me to share the link for you, them to connect in LinkedIn with you or anything like that?
Yeah, that would be great. I would love to connect with people on LinkedIn. I always love connecting with new people that aren't trying to sell something. I just love learning from others and finding out what they're doing and checking out their profiles to see what kind of content they're producing. I'm a learner, so I'm always learning.
Yeah, me too. I love that as well. And just seeing, like you said, just seeing and observing what people are doing, what's working. So great. Well, I will share the link to connect with you over on LinkedIn. And if you do connect with Michelle, if you could let her know that you've heard her awesome interview on B2B Content Strategist podcast, that would be fantastic. So Michelle, thank you so much. It's been a great conversation. All that's left to say to the listeners is thank you so much for listening. And I'll certainly catch you in the next one. But for now, yeah, thank you, Michelle. It's been great.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of B2B Content Strategist. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode. Feel free to connect with me on social media. You can find me, Amy Woods, founder of Content 10X, on LinkedIn. If you get in touch, please do leave a message and let me know that you listen to B2B Content Strategist. You can also connect with Content 10X. We're on LinkedIn, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And for more insights on optimizing your content marketing and the power of repurposing, head over to content10x.com. You'll discover valuable resources to help you maximize the impact of your content. We have our sister podcast, the Content 10X Podcast, hundreds and hundreds of blog posts, and a library full of free resources and guides all about how to be a better content creator and content repurposer. If you're seeking consulting support or a trusted partner to handle your content creation, repurposing, and distribution, then also reach out to us. We offer a world-class, fully managed service that takes care of as much or as little as you need when you need it. Once again, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I'll catch you in the next one.